the service member may act differently at work, and he acts differently when he's with his family. That's when you know you could separate work life from family life. And I say that having a family is important because it brings you back to reality as to who you are as a person. Your family keeps you grounded. Your kids keep you grounded as well. And then you're a father or a mother at the end of the day. You're just not chief petty officer or your petty officer or your sir, ma'am. You get to come home and be dad, mom, brother for whatever reason. But that's the importance of a family.
Thinking of having your own podcast? Check out anchor.fm. It's the easiest way to make one, and it's what I use for my podcast. I fell in love and chose to marry a military member. I had no idea what it would be like, and it was nothing close to what I had expected. What is life like for a military family? Hello, troopers! Welcome to the Afterthought on the Military Family Podcast, where you will hear stories straight from a military wife. And I am your host, Mommy Rich. Every week, I will be exploring not only my experiences as a military wife, but also real stories and lessons from military members, spouses, children, and even parents who have faced disappointments and excitements, challenges, and celebrations of this chosen lifestyle. Excited to explore adventures as a military family? Let's get started! My special guest is actually a former colleague of mine in the Foreign Service. And she, ayan ha, I have a cue for you guys already. She is an empowered woman. I am already telling you. She is actually very passionate in working out. I think I have this feeling that she got that kind of discipline and attitude when it comes to working out. Of course, with her military experience, and we're gonna get to know more about that later on. And she is a dog lover. If you can only see her posts about her baby Julia, she adores her and vice versa, but she is definitely a very good fur mom. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce to you a good friend of mine, Miss Vicky Dizon.
Hey, Mommy Reg. Thank you first and foremost for asking me to be a guest on your podcast. Fact, I've never been on a podcast. This is my first podcast as well. So please be nice to me. No, just kidding.
Okay, so let's talk about first your days in the service.
Okay.
Vix, can you tell us when did you join and how old were you then when you joined the military?
Okay, I joined literally on September 19, 2004. 3 years after 9/11, and I was 24 years old at the time, and I was turning 25 December of that year.
Wow. So you were really in your mid-20s. Let's say you're just really getting started with your own life, and you decided to join. So which branch did you join?
I decided to join the Navy just because that was my experience as a kid, because my dad did his full 21 years of service in the United States Navy. So, you know, like what they said, the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree. So, of course, you got to go Navy because your dad was Navy.
Oh, yeah, that is so true. Wow. Well, you know what? Now that you've mentioned that, I think I'm going to invite your dad to be a guest too in my show.
Why not?
Let's talk about that later. Okay, so, later. Well, you've actually answered one question I have in mind of who inspired you to join the service. So is that an automatic, it's because of your dad? Or are there any other things or factors that you really thought of and, okay, I'm going to go for this. I'm going to join the Navy.
It was basically, well, my dad, because he shared his stories. And of course, we were lucky that we were able to deploy with him or stay with him during his deployments. And then, as everybody knows, in 2001, 9/11 happened. So being an American citizen, you know, oh, let me go fight for my country, yada, yada, yada. And then, so you joined, and I'm getting emotional.
It's
9/11 is emotional for me.
I can imagine. Actually, when you mentioned about you being with the entire family, being with your dad, especially at that time, he was still in the service, 9/11. Or
No, he had retired in 1989.
Oh, wow.
But I guess it's because, I don't know if people remember, the first ever Gulf War, he almost got recalled. He was out of the service, like retired out. But then because of his rate, because he was a corpsman, he was the first in line that was going to be recalled because of the war.
Yes.
You know, they used the term war back then. And then I was working a corporate job in Makati in the Philippines when 9/11 happened. And then all of a sudden, there was no internet.
I remember.
At that time, remember, it was just all CNN, all news. And I remember it was still RPN9. And they had shown the video of 9/11 like multiple times, asking people for help and all that stuff. And then you see all these soldiers from every branch of the service, not just the Navy. You know, they want to join the fight. They want to find these bad guys per se. And then you're going to ask yourself, as you know, as an American citizen, what can I do for my country? Because they just got attacked. So not right at 2001, but because that was one of the major events that sparked recruitment again. So in 2004, I was like, I told my dad, are recruiters still coming to the Philippines? Or do I got to fly back to the States to get recruited? And he's like, oh, I think the recruiter comes here at the retired affairs office in Manila. I was like, can I join? And he's like, you really want to join? I was like, yeah. I was like, I want to join. I want to see what you were talking about when I was a kid. Like, you go on ships, or you see this, you see that, or you see this in the movie and stuff like that. And that's what kind of like inspired me, you know, not to get off the question, but it was my dad, it was 9/11, and it was his sea stories that inspired me. So there you go. Yeah.
While you were talking earlier about the 9/11 and this information that you just gave me, I was actually having goosebumps. And we are just getting started, Vicky, you know?
I know. And I do apologize for breaking down, ladies and gentlemen.
That's
you know,
okay.
That
That's
stuff,
very understandable.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know what? That was actually a very sentimental reason of joining the military. Now let's go to when you were starting in the military. Let's go to that part. So you joined the Navy in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us briefly, how was your training like?
Oh my God.
Let's say when you were in the boot camp, describe it to us. How was it in a gist?
In a gist. So I come from the PI. I go to Guam, and Guam is where I catch my flight to Chicago. That's where boot camp was for me, right? So you got this little jet lag, first timer back in continental United States. So you go
imagine.
You get this recruiter shouting in your face, bah, 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 and then you haven't had proper sleep. Everything's new to you. Okay, fast forward. You're the oldest. I'm the oldest because everybody was 17 or 18, and 17-year-olds were on a waiver. I just want to put that out. At that time, if you joined at 17, you were on a waiver. The legal age was, of course, is 18. So I was the oldest. Then coming from the Philippines, you know that our sport is not running, swimming, or push-ups or sit-ups or nothing like that.
It's basketball.
It's basketball and it's folk dancing, right? So fast forward again. So, okay, I was always the last one in running because everybody was taller than me. And you know how it is in the United States. They got a sport called track and field in high school. So they're practiced on that. So I was the last one always finishing. And then at my swim qual, I failed my first jump. So when my RDC approached me, he's like, aren't you from the Philippines? You're supposed to know how to swim because you're from the islands. I was like, I don't know how to swim. And he's like, okay, all right, I get you. You're going to make it on your second jump. I was like, so scared, right? Because he's like, if you don't make it on your second jump, everybody's going to get punished because you didn't make it. I was like, oh, shit, you know?
Oh, my gosh.
I know. And then I was like, I got to make it. I got to make it. So, but then when I was walking out the door going to swimming remedial, he was like, I give you one tip, recruit. And I was like, what's that? He's like, remember the eagle? He spreads his wings, and then that's how you get to the top of the pool, because the pool was 15 feet deep. I was like, oh my goodness. Yeah, how am I going to? Oh, I was like, oh my God. And then I made it. For the sake of the listeners, yes, I made it on my second jump.
Yay!
And I made it back to our ship. We called it the ship. You know, I made it. But let me tell you, joining at 24 has its disadvantage and advantages, because physical, everybody's younger than you. Everybody can run faster than you. And since they're exposed, of course, they're from the United States. And your exposure is different because you're from the Philippines total.
That's true.
They have an advantage against you. So if I was to give advice to any of the listeners, if you got daughters, sons, or whatever who want to join any branch of the military, you know, let them join at a younger age, because the physical training is what's going to get you.
That is true. What are some of the things that you remember about adapting to military life? I know you're a military dependent. You grew up in the military world, but you can probably give us like a thing or two of having this kind of exposure. So what do you remember adapting?
Adapting is, one, it never gets old, is you don't know what's going to happen. When you get a set of orders, like let's say you're going to X, Y, and Z, but it can change to A, B, C without you having control over it.
Oh.
Let's say they tell you, oh, report to the base or to this airport no later than this day, this time, this hour. Okay, you're there. And then something happens. And then you're there, but then you're not going anywhere until A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Right.
So basically, you're at the airport or you're at where you were told to be at, but nothing's going to happen yet. And you're stuck there, unfortunately, on your own without knowing anybody because it's a new place.
Yeah.
It's something new for you. So you're just like, okay, what am I going to do? You know, that's one thing. You got to always be ready for any type of change. Two, you got to learn how to be very independent. Because why did I say that? I always waited for somebody to eat lunch with me. But that's not the case in the military. In the military, when they say, go have lunch or go get your snack or whatever.
Go eat.
Yeah, go eat. Don't wait on anybody else. Because if not, and then something happens, you'd be like, okay, we gave you a chance to eat your lunch or whatever, and you just didn't do anything about it. You're not going to get to eat lunch anymore or whatever, because something came up and that takes precedence over you taking your lunch. So
that's
value
true.
Your time. When somebody says, go take a break, take that break. And third, I guess, in the military life is the constant changing of people around you. Because
that is true.
Not everybody arrives the same day you arrive.
Yes.
And sometimes they have to leave for whatever circumstance or for whatever reason. But that person is your bestie or your go-to person. And here you are, again, without 24-hour notice. Oh, hey, you know, by the way, I have to leave because blah, 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 blah. And you're like, what? I thought you were my best friend. So here you are alone again. And then your thinking is, am I going to be able to find another person like this to become a best friend? You know, something. So you have to adapt, really, to relationships, you know.
Very well said, Vicky. I cannot agree more about those three things. You have to be ready.
Right.
Changes when it comes to the people around you happens. And like I'd say, be on time. Like when you're ordered to do something, do it. Like do it right away.
Right.
No other side comments, side waiting of whatsoever. Just do it. Because you wouldn't know if ever there will be another chance for you to get to do it.
Right, right. Basically, that's what it is.
I'm like hearing my husband on you. You're like the female version of my husband. I'm hearing you. I'm hearing him right now. But anyway, my next questions would be about your transition.
All right.
How long were you in the service before you got out?
I was in for 8 years. Total.
Eight long years.
Eight sacrificed years.
And those were all on active.
6.5 was on active, and the other 1.5 was on individual ready reserve, because you had to sign that. I signed that as I was checking out of active duty. So, yeah.
Right. Now we're going to talk about the transition part. So you were in the service for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
How did you describe that? Eight sacrificed years. 8 sacrificed years, but I'm sure it was all worth it.
Yes.
Okay. When did you leave the military?
I left July 10th, 2010. That was my last full day. I checked out of Bangor, Washington, and then I flew to my home of record, which has led me back here to the Philippines. So, yeah.
Nice. Okay. And if you don't mind me asking,
mm-hmm.
will you be able to share with us the reason why you had to leave the military?
Oh, okay. Back then, everybody knows this is still related to the 9/11 war against terror, right? So, of course, the troops were building because there was this war. And then for some reason in 2010, Big Navy said, we got to chop down the troops because there's too many of y'all. All right. So there was this program called PTS, Perform to Serve. And Big Navy looks at everybody's records. And if they still want to keep you, they keep you. If they don't want to keep you, you get separated with honorable discharge, whatever. Unfortunately, right. myself and along with several other Filipino sailors got affected by this program. I see. On the chopping list. So at my mark of 6 years of active service, I got chopped off. So mm-hmm. I had decided, okay, I did serve and all that stuff. Maybe it is time for another chapter of my life. So I didn't want to get out, but the Navy wanted me out. So you have mm-hmm. no choice, you know, like what I said in my previous, it's what they say that goes. So I got out and I was like, mm-hmm. let me try the civilian life. So that's what led to me getting out.
Okay. So that's the next question that I have for you. So what were your first few months out of the service? How was it like?
Oh my God. I enjoyed my sleep. I enjoyed the food. That's how I gained weight, by the way. No, yeah, you didn't hear bells. You didn't hear somebody getting you up at 5:30 in the morning. And then you weren't in uniform saying, I'm just in civilian clothes. And I could do whatever I want because when you're in the military, of course, you got to follow a lot of rules. You're highly expected to behave like a person in the military. Whereas when you first get out, I'm so happy. I don't got to wear this uniform. I could eat whatever. I could get fat. I could gain weight. I'm with my mom. I could go to the mall now. I could do whatever I want. That was the first thing I appreciated in the first couple of months. But the catch is I also missed my friends. Because everybody was still in Japan. And I was like, I love Japan. But of course, it was time to go. So it's a mixed feeling that you're happy that you're quote unquote home and that you're quote unquote free. But at the same time, you miss the people that you had connections with. And that was your homies. Mm-hmm. Those were your friends. Those were your besties. So here you are, you're alone. I was like, who's going to be my friend now? Oh, am I still going to go out on Friday night? You know, that kind of stuff. Because, I remember such and such would come get me in my barracks room and we would go have fun, blah, blah, blah. But of course, that's not your life mm-hmm. anymore. You transitioned over to civilian life. So that was my first year out. That's how I was. It wasn't just months. It was the first full year out. That's how I was.
Oh, wow. that was really an adjustment for you. It was a long-term 1 year of adjusting back to the civilian life. Okay, so you did mention quite a few of what you missed in the service, and you were really having that kind of adjustment. So what are some, though, that you are glad to have left behind?
Duty. I hate duty. I hate standing watches. Oh, my. I hate weekend duty because you have to give up your Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and you're just devoted to sitting in the barracks because you're really not allowed to go anywhere or you're not allowed to leave within premises of the base because something might happen. You might get recalled. And at that time, I was happy to be out of uniform, I guess. You know, quote unquote, you don't have to wear the same thing again and again. Mm-hmm. You're not wearing boots. You can wear flip-flops, that kind of thing.
I know. I mean, gosh, your boots are very heavy.
Right? You could.
I wonder if your toenails are still alive, Vicky, because seriously, I've been like, oh my goodness, if I'm going to wear these types of boots,
right?
My nails are done. They're done. They're dead. This podcast is powered by Anchor.fm. Making a podcast is free and easy with Anchor.fm.
What else did I appreciate? Home-cooked food. Really. You would take that for granted, but when I got out, it was every day I was asking my mom, can you make this? Can you make this for me? Luto mo naman ako noon, ganyan, diba tayo? Oh, I miss that. That's my favorite. Ah, yun na ba yung ganun, ganun, ganun. So, yeah. I think everybody, because everybody that I talked to that got out the same time I did, we all were like, yeah, we could eat whatever we want. Doesn't have to suck. It's not galley food.
Yeah, that kinda, I know.
Yeah, you know.
This is kind of a serious question.
Okay.
So when you're trying to reflect and reminisce now that you're out, I know you've been out for quite some time.
12 years.
What did you...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn about yourself, Vix?
Before joining, I was this weak girl who always had a cold and who had less self-confidence in herself. When I joined, I learned... And I was always dependent with my family, like always having somebody else do stuff for me. When I joined, I became independent from doing my laundry, ironing my uniform, doing my groceries, cleaning my room and all that stuff, and taking care of myself, like avoiding to get sick because there's no mommy, I'm sick, I need this, I need that. No, it's just you and you only. Even though you have friends, they're not there to take care of you. They're also there to take care of themselves.
That's true.
Not in a bad way. Because I got friends when I was sick, like they bring me soup. But that's the general mentality in the military is you got to take care of yourself because no one else will take care of yourself for you. What else did I learn? Discipline. And you develop habits like even though you have an alarm to wake you up, if you know you need to get to work at 3 a.m., your body adjusts to your environment a lot. You also learn how to make decisions. Like what we said earlier, there's no time. You gotta make it now or never. So you can't call home and be like, mommy, what am I gonna do? You know, what do you think I should do? There's no more stuff like that. I gotta make this decision and I gotta make it now. So what I took away from being in the military, now that I'm out for 12 years, independency, fast thinking, fast decision making. Those are my top three. Yeah.
Wow. Those are very good insights, Vicky. I mean, for those listeners out there, regardless if you join the military or not, it's very important that you get to reflect on the things that are happening in your life. It so happened that you got exposed to this kind of discipline and, you know, this self-searching. It's really not just soul-searching. It's self-searching that you weren't really aware of that you're capable of actually doing more than before. And these things, yes, it was tough. Yes, it was strict. Yes, it may be, it sucks.
Right.
But it made you stronger. It made you, these things that empowered you. And now you're more confident. I can see that in you. I mean, you are definitely, you know what you want. You're going to say straight in the face.
Right?
But of course, you know, as far as restrictions are concerned or sensitivity-ness, so let's put it that way. You try your best to be empathetic with the people around you, not just because you care for them, but it's because in the military, they're empathy is kind of far reach.
Yes.
Now we're going to talk about love life. I like that laugh. Okay. So, did you ever had a relationship while you were at the service?
I've had several serious relationships. Yeah, while I was in active duty. It was even close to getting married. I was engaged. Yes, I was engaged.
What? Wait, were these, how do I say it? I don't want to say exes, but these former partners or, were they all in the service too?
Yes, they were all in the service. Yeah.
Wow.
No, I've never had a civilian counterpart when I was in the military. So they were all active duty. Some were in my same chain of command, which is a no-no, by the way, but, you know, it happens. even though there are rules, you can't control the feeling sometimes, but that particular ex-fiance was in another command, but we were in the same duty station, which was Italy. So, yeah.
I see. Okay. So, what was the longest, how would I say it? No need to drop names, but what was the longest relationship you've had? Like, number of, like, months, years? What was the longest?
A year and a half.
A year
with that ex-fiance. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. In terms of moving on with your life, I wanted to know what is your hope? Or what are your hopes for the future?
Hopes for the future. One, probably get a civilian job that's related to the military. For some reason, I know it's going to sound weird to all our troopers out there. You think that when you get out, you're happy with your freedom, you're not in the service, and you're not doing military-related stuff. But there's a point in your life, like, suddenly, I miss it. I miss the ship. I miss the people. I miss what we used to do. But then, you know, you're out. So maybe in the future, you could still go on with your hopes, dreams, and plans, but still be attached to the military in a non-strict way. So that's one of my hopes for my future, is to find a military-related job. But to all our listeners, you know, this is going to sound weird. I know Miss Mommy Reg over here knows it. And I'm still planning to go back. But I don't know, with all the changes the military has incurred in the past 12 years, if what I went through is still applicable to what the military is right now. That's going to be another podcast, but that's another adjustment. Because, people have been telling me military now is different from the military you went through, which is check. That's life. Changes equals life. Yeah. What else for my future? Probably to, it's going to sound like a far-fetch, but work with other veterans to help other veterans going through mental health or any issues. But I guess mental health now is the trend, because in service, there's mental health issues. And of course, after military life, you have mental health. So I wish there was a support group like that here in the Philippines, but unfortunately, there's not. I guess it's more pronounced in mainland USA, veterans helping fellow veterans and stuff like that. But for now, that's what I hope in the future. You know, if I don't get to go back, that's okay. I mean, sometimes things are not meant to happen the way you want it to happen, and other things happen in place of what you would like to happen. That's kind of like my outlook. But I would really, really, really want to work with active military veterans and their families and stuff like that.
That is very, I really felt the sincerity. Thank you. With what you've said. And the next question that I have for you would be, what do you think is the role of the military families to these members, the military members that we have, in surviving? When I say surviving, because there's a lot of unforeseen circumstances when you're in
that's
the military,
true.
Right?
That's so true.
So what do you think, considering that you were exposed to the military life at a very young age, you have been part of the service, you may not have yet your own family now, but that doesn't stop you from sharing. What do you think is the role of the family to these service people for them to be able to survive their day-to-day life in the service?
From what I saw from my married shipmates, the spouse, mostly it's I have never seen a husband spouse. Mostly what I've seen from my experienced people is a wife. The wife is the one who is the backbone of the family, especially when the husband is deployed and there are kids involved. That's what I can say. Mm-hmm. And the family is where active duty military person finds his way to come home and be himself after taking off the uniform. The service member may act differently at work, and he acts differently when he's with his family. That's when you know you could separate work life from family life. And I say that having a family is important because it brings you back to reality. as to who you are as a person. Your family keeps you grounded. Your kids keep you grounded as well. And then you're a father or a mother at the end of the day. You're just not chief petty officer or your petty officer or your sir, ma'am. You get to come home and be dad, mom, brother for whatever reason. But that's the importance of a family. Because if me, okay, I'm speaking from my experience, I'm single. I come home and I don't have like family where I could just be myself again for the next 8 hours before I do the whole routine all over again. So for me, it's routine, routine, routine. What I see is when you have a family with you that supports you, you could be routine family and you have two separate lives. And then you be serious on your career to make it as far as you want. And then you got your cheerleaders on the side, which is your wife and your kids.
Yes.
And then when you go to ceremonies, you get to bring them along and they're proud of you for what you've achieved. And they get to see like, oh, I remember when my dad was this, this, and this, and he now he's promoted to, you know, the next level, and I'm there standing up with him on stage and whatnot. So that's the role of the family, to support the active duty member. And then, of course, deployments, ships. It's the mom. It's the spouse that's left behind. That's the anchor to the family. Because now, for example, you're the wife, right? And let's say you have kids. You're now the bridge between your husband and your kids. And you got to explain to the kids why daddy's away and then mommy's in charge, right?
Yeah.
That's the importance of the...
You're like stepping up to be a single parent.
For a meantime. You know? It's not a long time. And then, of course, like what you said, your husband is always preparing you. That's another thing. Like, you got to take over when you need to take over because I'm away. Stuff like that, you know. That's the beauty of having a family. And that's the role of dependent in a military life. They're the ones that provide the strength or the support or just cheering him on or cheering him up after a bad day and stuff like that. So some families might think that they're not important, but I'm throwing it out there. Y'all are.
My next question would probably be more deeper. I'd like to ask for what is your message to the society on how can they play a role in supporting the military family as a whole?
I know every Veterans Day, it's cliche to say thank you for your service, but it's more than that. And then I think sometimes what I've heard is, of course, there's the good, there's the bad. Good is military families get good discounts back in mainland United States, like when they're shopping. But of course, it's much more deeper, like what you said, much more deeper question. I think that military families need a good support system as well. It's not because they've survived means that they don't need help. Some of these families actually are on the brink of falling apart and they're just making it work, especially if they're overseas, because in places like where I've been, like Japan, Sigonella, there isn't available resources to save your family, like marriage counseling and all, you know, that kind of mature kind of stuff. So, but I understand when you're stationed mainland, you get all these services. Now,
right,
not to sound demanding or whatever, but people need to understand that military active duty, regardless of what service, and military families go through a hell of a lot more than what civilian families are going through day to day. I'm not saying that we're special or we deserve special treatment. It's nothing like that. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that if there's stress, times it 10 for a military family, because we both have rules. Civilian and military have rules, but military rules are way much different than civilian rules, and resources sometimes are limited because it depends on where you are and what's going on, basically. So my message to our listeners, to our troopers, is when somebody in the military or a military dependent or family is going through something, lend an ear. Sometimes all they need to do is vent, because they can't find anyone to vent to or to get it off their chest. And sometimes that helps a lot. Just getting it off your chest, like talking to somebody who will listen to you unconditionally and unjudgmentally. Two, try to understand that there's a lot of stress in the military life period. And three, don't complain when the ships are back that everything is crowded. Yes, we miss land, so of course we're going to go everywhere. No, just kidding. But yeah, if you live near... Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
One time, you know, short anecdote. One time we get back to Yokosuka, I heard somebody complaining, oh my God, when the ship was not here, everything was so quiet. Now everything's so crowded. Yeah, that's what we do when we get back, people. We're happy to be back on land and, you know, feet on the ground and eating regular people food, by ship food. So, you know, have patience. No, just kidding. Try to understand us. Yeah, basically, I mean, that's the funny thing. It is true when the ships are back and you're near a base that has a port. Yes, we're going to crowd the fast food. Yes, we're going to crowd the malls and everything. But do understand it's because we miss being on land and enjoying all this stuff, you know? So yeah, I have a little bit understanding. This is the first time I've ever spoken about my military experience. I mean, the first one was LaSalle. They just asked me, like, if I've been to Afghanistan. And for our troopers out there, no, I have not been to the front lines, you know? I've only been on a carrier that's been forward deployed, and that's about it. But I do have friends who have been there, so that's where I get my stories as well. Oh, that's another thing I just want to put out there. When active duty people tell their stories, it's either they've been there or they've heard the story from somebody who's been there. That's why sometimes we're like so emotional and all that. It comes with the uniform people, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's not meant to be bragging, but it's meant to say, I've been there and it sucks. Or I've been there and I've seen that happen. That Hollywood movie, that's not telling the truth. So that could be saved for another podcast, but I just want to put it out there to the troopers. If ever you're with a active duty or a veteran and you take them to a movie where there's military scenes, expect some side comments, people. Expect some side comments.
For sure. Yeah. So I guess that's the hashtag that we have for all militaries out there and including the families.
Hashtag
huge sacrifice. Yeah. Like seriously, there's no action in the military without sacrifice, without thinking that there will have to be some sacrifices here. There will be people that may be affected with this and loved ones. So it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks. And we just don't know when will this ever end. Thank you so much, Vicky. I am grateful. I cannot say anything else but super grateful. I am blessed to know a military member with such big, beautiful heart.
Yeah.
Thank you. So thank you.
Thank you, Mommy Reg. Thank you. Thank you, troopers.
Afterthought on the Military Family is a proud member of the Rumble Royale Podcast Network. Thanks for listening. If you are new here and enjoyed this episode, please follow the podcast by tapping the bell to be notified of new episodes. This helps military families who want to live their best lives find the show. And if you would like to share your story, please connect with us through our Facebook page, Mommy Reg, and we would love for you to be part of the show. Remember, you are not alone. Until next time!